is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for listening. But first this.
It's the end of the year. It's the end of the year.
It would be a mistake to advertise to ISIL that there are safe havens for them outside of Iraq or Syria.
And the world is shaped by people like Jim Foley and the overwhelming majority of humanity who are appalled by those who killed him.
The ability to steal gossipy email is not the same as physical 9/11 style attacks.
Russia's political and economic isolation will only increase.
The United States will not torture.
On the last day of this year, we start the hour with a look back at some of the global events of 2014 that fundamentally reshaped geopolitics. One of those is the Ebola outbreak that ravaged West Africa and continues to. We'll be looking at why health officials failed to halt the spread of that disease and the far-reaching consequences of their mistakes. That's in just a few minutes. Then there's the rise of ISIS in the Middle East, Russia's annexation of Crimea, violence over the summer in Gaza, and a peace process that seems to be moving further away with Israel. Nuclear talks with Iran, the Senate report on torture, the thawing of U.S. relations with Cuba, a new wave of cyber attacks to help us break down the year that is and the year that was. Shadi Hamid, he's a fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of the new book, Temptations of Power, Islamists and Illiberal Democracy in a New Middle East. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Kimberly Martin is our friend and professor of political science at Barnard College at Columbia University.
Todd, thanks for having me back.
And Nancy Soderberg, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's very good to have you all. And Shadi, let me start with you and let's start in the Middle East. You have said that the rise of ISIS in Syria and Iraq represents a basic failure of U.S. foreign policy, certainly dating back to the Iraq War in 2003. Explain.
Sure. Well, what was so bad about 2014 in this respect is there comes a point where you can't undo the damage. With the rise of ISIS, Iraq and Syria are never going to go back to what they were before. So in that sense, as we go forward, we're going to see divided societies. We're not going to see cohesive states. And the broader trend is really a collapse of the regional order in the Middle East as we know it, that the rise of ISIS doesn't just affect Iraq and Syria, but has spillover effects across the region. And I think the problem here is this was not just predictable, but it was predicted. Syria experts were warning this administration as early as 2012 that if we don't do more to intervene proactively in Syria, there's going to be a political vacuum and extremists and terrorists are going to rise to the fore and become the dominant actors. And that's precisely what happened, not just with ISIS, but also with the Al-Qaeda affiliate, Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria. And there's some irony here because Obama was so insistent on not getting dragged in to Syria in 2012 that he saw his legacy as extracting the U.S. from these Middle East entanglements. But this is the cost of dithering. You wait and you wait, and then 2 or 3 years later, you're dragged back in, and the intervention is going to be more involved, more costly, and more bloody. And that's what we're seeing today.
Shadi Hamid, the trip of ISIS or ISIL from Syria across Iraq was so horrific and has been so horrific and so entangling that many people have, in a way, forgotten about the war between Gaza and Israel that took place earlier this year.
I almost forgot about it too. So, yes, the fact that when we kind of look back at 2014, Palestine-Israel doesn't even come up as one of the first things shows how messy this region is. We could also talk about the civil war in Libya, a consolidation of authoritarianism in Egypt. So it's a very long list of bad things. But I think what was so troubling about Israel-Palestine is that there could have been hope. There should have been hope. There were months-long negotiations that were taking place for a good chunk of 2014. Those didn't work out, and what we see is a return to violence. So we're very far away from addressing really the root causes of some of these conflicts, including in Gaza.
Well, Kimberly Martin, as we talk about root causes in the Middle East, one of the people we have to talk about is Vladimir Putin. And in a lot of ways, this was the year of Vladimir Putin. But what did we really see in Europe? Did the annexation of Crimea and the Russian-backed civil war in Ukraine change the balance of power at all in Eastern Europe?
Well, certainly Putin is attempting to change the balance of power. But I think what we have learned is that it's kind of amazing how well the United States and Europe have stuck together on the sanctions regime against Putin, which is actually harming Russia and putting Russia in a worse situation than it would have been otherwise. I think one of the things we have to remember is that the fact that the sanctions regime is sticking together so well is really due to something that could not have been predicted previously. And that was the downing of the Malaysian Air Flight number 17 that really brought Europeans together. The other thing that's happened that nobody had control over prior to it happening was the plummet in oil prices, which has made the sanctions regime have a great deal more impact in Russia than it might have had otherwise. And so Putin now faces the new year, the anniversary of his 15th year in power, with a very bad situation in the Russian economy.
Is there any way to determine what lessons Vladimir Putin may have taken away, not only from Europe sticking together on sanctions against him, but also from the resistance that he's confronted in eastern Ukraine?
I'm not sure that Putin is someone who takes lessons very well. He is unpredictable because he is acting primarily on behalf of his own interests, of himself and his personal network, and he's using the kinds of techniques of masking and deception that come from his KGB past. So I think it's unclear what Putin might be deciding to do in the future. But one thing we know for sure is that it's very unlikely that he would ever take any steps that make it appear as though he is bowing into the will of the West. He is not going to blink, because if it appears at any point that he is blinking, that means that the primary pillar on which he has based his entire time in office, his ability to stand up to the West and to show that Russia is a great power, would be completely shaken. And so I don't think we're likely to see more Russian cooperation coming from Putin.
Ambassador Nancy Soderbergh, there was a time when to speak of Russia and the former Soviet Union and somebody like Vladimir Putin, perhaps, was to talk about Cuba, because they were such an important satellite. Times have changed, and there's no doubt now that normalizing relations with Cuba is not only closing sort of a long chapter of animosity, but also potentially resetting relationships in the Western Hemisphere.
Absolutely. I think it'll be the historic opportunity in March when, first time in decades, that the U.S. and Cuba will be together for the Latin American summit. President Obama calls this a new chapter in our relations, but still the same book, because the Castros are still in power. So there's a limited amount of economic moves that the president can do, but certainly on the diplomatic front, it will be quite a day when you see the flags of each country flying over in both Havana and in Washington.
Nancy Soderbergh, we also have to talk about cybersecurity. I know that you think it's one of the most important stories of 2014. Whether the Sony cyber attack came from North Korea or from another source, this was not the first attack of its kind, but it did permeate the public's attention more than any other. Is this because movies and movie stars were involved, or is there something fundamentally different here in the Sony attack?
I think that this caught the imagination because it's real-life movie being played out in our lives, so it's going to get attention. But the number one threat that we have, and it's not just me, it's the director of the National Intelligence puts out an annual report, and cybersecurity has surpassed terrorism as our number one threat, and we're behind the curve. The North Korean dictatorship or some big disgruntled Sony employee, the fact that we can't even tell that for sure tells you how hard this is to stay ahead of the curve. And the fact that a person sitting somewhere could shut down an entire country's grid is a frightening scenario. And we are not ahead of the curve on this. It's our number one threat. It is moving so fast, so dangerously, and so quickly that we're just not ahead. So I think this will continue to grow as an enormous threat, regardless of how the Sony North Korea story unwinds in the end.
Well, to each of you, my three guests, it wouldn't be 2014 unless I got some predictions for 2015 out of each of you. Shadi Hamid, we talked about the Middle East. Where do you think the confrontation with ISIS heads this next year?
Well, I think the big problem is there isn't really a strategy, particularly not in Syria. We're trying to train about 5,000 fighters with $500 million, which is really a drop in the bucket in the larger sweep of what's happening in Syria. So there still is a resistance, and really addressing the big elephant in the room is, who do you actually support on the ground? Are there enough people to support? But also the fact that the Assad regime, in all of its brutality, is a big part of the problem. And there's no way to address Syria in the coming years without having something to say about that part of it. And there doesn't seem to be any willingness to really confront that. So in that sense, I mean, ISIS and the after effects of ISIS will be with us, not just for 2015, but for many years to come. So that's why, you know, in some ways we have to prepare ourselves for, you know, a very long struggle. And I'm not sure if the American people or the American leadership really have it in them to really stay the course, if you will, on ISIS and a number of other issues that, you know, as bad as they look in 2014, they might actually get worse in ways that we might not be able to anticipate right now. And I think that's one of the main lessons of the Arab Spring, is if it can get worse, it probably will.
Professor Kimberly Martin, let me get a prediction from you about Russia. A more constructive Vladimir Putin cowed by sanctions and the collapse of the ruble?
I doubt it. I think he has a very strong incentive to never do anything that would indicate that he's giving in to Western pressure. But I think what happens in Russia this spring is going to be something interesting to watch. I think the timing of what happened yesterday with Navalny was not accidental. People are going into a two-week New Year holiday, which is the most important cultural holiday in Russia, where everything shuts down. People get together and party and drink with their friends and talk to each other. And what they're going to be talking about this time around is certainly the terrible state of the Russian economy. And it's just going to be interesting to see, as the economy continues to be in trouble in Russia, all of the evidence indicates that oil prices are going to stay low, what that means for the Russian budget, for social services, for protests by ordinary people who start feeling the pinch of things. So I think we're entering a dangerous time in Russia. I don't predict that we're going to have a lot of good relations between Russia and the West in the near future. And I think we just have to wait and see.
I want to thank each of you for joining us to help us understand 2014 and also give us a roadmap for the coming year, no matter how troubling it may be. Nancy Soderberg, former ambassador to the United Nations, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Professor Kimberly Martin of Barnard College at Columbia University and our resident Russia expert. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you, Todd.
And of course, Shadi Hamid, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, author of the new book, Temptations of Power, Islamists and a Liberal Democracy in a New Middle East. Thanks, Shadi.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.